From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. Well, former NSA security contractor Edward Snowden joined a public question and answer session with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow via video. Snowden had a chance to talk with Putin. He asked him if Russia had similar surveillance programs as the United States, referring, of course, to the mass collection of storage from data from individuals around the world. Mr. Snowden, you are a former agent, a spy. I used to be working for an intelligence service, too. We're going to talk one professional language, Putin began, via a translator. And he basically said that Russian intelligence operations were strictly regulated by Russian law and that they had to require court permission to spy on an individual. He said that Russian special forces did use surveillance to thwart terrorists and criminals, but that it was regulated, whatever that means. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has said that he has a right to send troops into the Ukraine, but hopes he will not have to exercise that right. In a moment, Craig Hewlett joins us for a couple hours. We're going to be talking with Craig about this situation and so much more, so stand by for that. Surging home prices have helped nearly 2 million homeowners get back above water on their mortgages over the past year. During the first quarter, 9.1 million, or 17% of the homeowners who were seriously underwater on their homes, meaning their debt exceeded the home's value by 25% or more. That's down from 10.9 million, or 26% of all properties a year earlier. States with the highest percentages of seriously underwater homes include Nevada, Florida, and Illinois. The housing expert, of course, Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Well, a tinge of good news there, huh, Catherine?
Yes, absolutely. This is very good news, George. And it's certainly good news for the owners. Now, we're getting reports that the spring housing market is off to a slow start. And one of the reasons is the buyers are complaining that the prices have come up. So one man's good news is another man's bad news, if you will.
You know, in this particular case, too, with Janet Yellen saying yesterday that the Fed's going to stand by and keep pushing as this economy gets better and better and better. I guess they're trying to do all they can to keep this propped up, Catherine.
Well, yes and no, George. Certainly the central bank has been infusing money into the economy. At the same time, if you look at the way we're globalizing and the way we're automating, you know, it was very much understood in the 1990s that Americans' incomes would fall even dramatically. And I think it's still not clear what the exit plan is, because we have over 100 million people on means-tested subsidies. And if you look at the extent to which the federal government is now supporting many households, it's extraordinary. So, you know, if anything, I think unemployment is going to get much worse.
Okay, Catherine. Talk to you later.
And have a
Catherine's
great
website, solari.com. A study to appear in the fall of 2014, the issue of the academic journal Perspectives on Politics, titled Testing Theories of American Politics, Elites, Interest Groups, and Average Citizens, finds that the U.S. is no longer a democracy, but instead an oligarchy. What the heck is going on? So many things to talk about. We've got Craig Hewlett with us for 2 hours, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Look at all the things that have been going on over the past several weeks, several months, of course. The situation in the Ukraine with Russia taking over Crimea and Putin saying, look, I don't want to go into Ukraine unless I have to, whatever that means. And, of course, this situation in Nevada with the rancher Bundy and that bizarre situation as well. And now this new report that's going to be coming out in the fall that simply says that we are not a democracy anymore. So it's time to bring in Craig Hewlett, of course, author of The Hydra of Carnage. And he was a speechwriter and special assistant for Congressman retired and passed away now, Jack Metcalf. And he had been a consultant to federal law enforcement and Homeland Security for more than 25 years as well with the ATF Homeland Security, of course, coming into existence after 9/11. Welcome back, Craig. It's a good time to have you.
Thank you for having me on, George.
I want to get your reaction to the story, of course, of the rancher and his issue with the Bureau of Land Management. And I know you've been following it. What's your overall take on all of that, Craig?
Well, I think the most troubling aspect is I think the American people need to really understand something. I know that Snopes came out with a debunking of Senator Reid and his son's possible involvement. But that's what Snopes does. I mean, I don't think they've ever debunked anything that turned out to be favorable to the American people. They tend to debunk things that are an admonishment towards the government, and then they debunk the story in favor of the government. I don't recall anything that they've ever done that supported a position of the American people thinking that there's a problem. So I think if you take the lead from them and how they try to debunk this issue, I downloaded the story and read it carefully and then went back and looked at Clive and Bundy's claims. And the fact is, they're claiming that the Chinese corporation that Senator Reid's son was legal counsel for, they're trying to set up a solar energy platform on that land and in surrounding land, and that supposedly to debunk the theory that there's any involvement of the Reid family, they cite that in 2012 the Chinese pulled out. But that's a completely non sequitur, in my opinion. They're saying that they pulled out in 2012. This contestation between the Bundys and the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service goes back 20 years. That means for 7 years, Reid was legal counsel. Both Reids were fully aware of the ENN project, working on it, and they were both in favor of it. And the most appalling part is that the ENN, a Chinese company that was trying to purchase land, the appraised value of that land was $40 million, round figures. They got it for $4 million due to Reid's influence and the senator's influence on the county commission. So they got it for a nickel. And at the same time, they're refusing to negotiate with the Bundy family for over $1 million in grazing fees, which is the grounds for them to be taking the cattle, and eventually they can take the ranch. Ultimately, they can wipe the Bundys off the planet. But, you know, we negotiate and drop the debt of tyrants all over the world. We relieve them of their sovereign debt. We relieve corporations of their debt structures to save them. We bail everybody out. But this man is going to be held to pay grazing fees and over $1 million. And we've brought it to this kind of a confrontation. So let's be real clear. This is not the county sheriff. This is the White House.
That's right.
This is federal. This comes under Homeland Security. Every agency that's involved comes under Homeland Security. So if they've got snipers and SWAT teams and canine teams, and I saw some of the video clips, the use of the canine teams alone on unarmed civilians, women mostly, I think was as bad as anything we witnessed in the 50s during the Civil Rights Movement. Those clips we saw of German shepherds attacking unarmed black people in the streets of Baltimore and Detroit.
Yep.
So this has gone hideous. But, you know, I can't help but think this isn't out of control because of mistakes being made. This isn't turning into a confrontation at this level by errors of judgment on the part of the federal authorities.
Like Waco was. Waco was a disaster.
Waco was a clear bad judgment.
That's right.
And Janet Reno made the call. We know who did it. I embarrassingly was doing an interview with two of the agents in the field, ATF agents. This was back when I was a consultant with ATF. I went on the air with two of them that were in the building during the Oklahoma City bombing, but they were also at Waco.
Yeah.
And they described how the ATF was there, but they were completely overruled. Everything they wanted to do, they were overruled, the field agents. And in the end, somebody called in on the talk show and asked the agents. I had them live on talk shows, by the way. And I had to go on the air with them to make it possible. But when these agents were asked who was responsible for Waco, neither agent would respond.
Right.
They just said, I can't respond to that. So I said, I'll be more than happy to.
It was a career killer. Of course. Absolutely. So in this particular case, they knew what they were doing. They had it all planned. It was not a comedy of errors. I was impressed with the fact that some tough Americans showed up there and got the BLM to back down, at least temporarily.
Well, what I saw happen is, as I watched it, you know, they tried to make a case at one point that these were militia members and that they were fronting women, sort of like accusing them the way we would accuse Al-Qaeda terrorists of hiding behind women and letting the women be killed. That wasn't what was going on at all. I know white women as well as I know any women on earth. And believe me, when white women in southern states get angry at law enforcement, you don't need to manipulate them. Okay, these women that were in these video clips I saw, they were right, they were angry, and they were fearless in the face of those dogs. And the BLM had to back down, but this wasn't a surrender. I could tell as each one of them, I played it over and over again, each one of the different agents, I saw them touch their earbuds and then talk back, speak back into it.
That's right.
They were ordered to leave as a strategic withdrawal.
Yep. There was just too much publicity.
There was no way they could win it.
No, they could not win it. It would have been a disaster, and the timing for them couldn't have been worse. So they backed off. I don't know what's going to happen to Bundy in the future, Craig, but we'll continue to monitor that. Of course, the big story over the last few days continues to be the Ukraine, where Putin, of course, knows we're really not going to do much. And now he's got his troops bordering the Ukraine, and he's saying he's got a right to send the troops in. There is violence in the Ukraine. Some people are saying, you know, this is manipulated by Russia. Others are saying no. But I think he's going to go in eventually, don't you?
Well, it depends on, well, the one thing Putin has made clear is he believes that the United States is behind it. He believes the United States was behind the coup d'etat that unseated the Ukrainian leadership and replaced it with the current leadership. And the $3 billion, and make no mistake, it's $3 billion we've now pumped into the Ukrainian government, the new government. And that money is being shifted into military activity immediately. So that's why the troops are moving east on the Ukraine side. But what's interesting, I don't know if it's funny, really, it's kind of a comedy of errors in a sense, but, you know, when six or eight tanks and armored personnel carriers move east from the Ukraine under the Ukrainian flag, and then they disappear, and nobody knows where they are, and they return under the Russian flag, it's kind of Monty Python looking.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so, yeah, how far is this going to go? Well, NATO just deployed troops, and it was the White House that pushed NATO very hard to deploy troops, increase their funding, and President Obama demanded that they, interestingly enough, increase the personnel on the ground into this confrontation. And he's demanding that NATO put people on the ground. That's because, truth be told, we don't have the troops.
Is this a World War III possibility?
Very real possibility. In fact, in the 40 years I've been out here in the public arena, I have never been as uncomfortable as I am tonight. That I don't believe this president, I think this president doesn't have enough power to push back on the oligarchy that runs this country, which we're going to touch on later, maybe.
Yeah, but, yes, we will.
But clearly, Obama is taking orders, and he doesn't seem to have a handle on it. You can tell he doesn't have a real handle on it from his own perspective. When he's confronted with these things that happen suddenly in his face, or Putin comes back with the comments he comes back with, and I got to tell you, Putin he's a bad guy, all right? I know he's not a good man by any stretch, but as a Russian, you've got to look at him and pay very close attention. When he was asked, you know, are you going to annex Alaska after you do Crimea and Ukraine, he said, no, I don't think so. It's too cold.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look, the element of humor in his side is because he's absolutely fearless in the face of what's going on.
Yeah, he really is. He's the kind of guy to laugh at if an old woman tripped over the curb. I mean, he's got that kind of morbid sense of humor. And he's a former KGB guy. He wants to resurrect the old Soviet Union, Craig.
Well, if that charge was made by a former colleague of his who's very disenchanted with Putin because he was removed by Putin, and it was his argument that that's what Putin was doing. I think a better way of looking at it might be that what Putin is doing is he's drawing a line in the sand that I knew back in 1990 sooner or later was going to happen. When the Soviet Union fell and Bush went into Iraq the first time, Persian Gulf won, I argued at that point that the primary reason we were doing it, which came out of a trilateral commission meeting white paper that was published. I had it in hand. I read from it and quoted from it, held it up in audiences, that argued that now that the Soviet Union had collapsed, it was time that Western powers, led by American military, go in and remove the military capabilities of, they named the countries, Iraq was named first. Iran and Syria were named second and third.
I'm in St. Louis right now, Craig, and the St. Louis Blues won in overtime, triple overtime, over the Chicago Blackhawks in hockey. In the stadium, the Scotts Trade Arena was packed with people. And I'm watching this, and I'm saying every one of them, of course all of us too, our lives are affected by these people like Putin, like President Obama, like NATO, when they do something. And I want to talk with you about that, because we could wake up one morning and you're not going to be going to a hockey game to have some fun. This could be a disaster of biblical proportions. Craig Hewlett with us for a couple hours. Plus, of course, the definition of an oligarchy is a small group of people having control of a country. They say that's happened here. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Craig Hewlett with us. Craig, are we going to wake up one morning and find out we're at war with Russia? Is it going to happen like that?
That is how things happen. That's the sad part about it. And the American people, as Taylor Caldwell once quoted, had one of her characters say it in a novel, they'll wake up one morning and they'll be at war. They'll be picking up bodies in the street, their own children. And they'll look up and they'll say, why didn't somebody warn us? The vast majority of the American people haven't got a clue there's even a problem.
Nope, not at all. So this report that's coming out in the fall that simply says we're no longer a democracy, we're an oligarchy. Tell me about this. What the heck's going on?
Well, it was a Princeton University, two professors, Princeton University. They it's the first ever academic study at this level that's been done in such a fashion. There's been nothing like it. Usually we've tried to look at theories of democracy and pluralism in a lot of different ways, but nobody's ever done what these two have done. If you recall, the last time you and I did a lengthy interview, I discussed the two Swiss scientists that came up with a new creative model about how the multinational monopoly corporations dominate every aspect of our life, and in their model they had a holographic image that they could use to demonstrate how the core, they called it a bow tie effect, how the core group at the center of this cylindrical model that they created as a hologram, a cylindrical model, how at the very center of it, there was only 147 large multinational corporations that controlled virtually 90% of everything that matters in the world. And it was a provable, documentable fact, and they were praised by their peers. Well, this follows on the heels of it, is very similar to that, because what they've discovered is, by empirical evidence and test data, they show that basically, well, let me read you just a very short line.
Okay,
the
sure.
Central point that emerges from our research is that the economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while mass-based interest groups and average citizens have little or no influence. Our findings also point toward the need to learn more about exactly which economic elites have power and how much impact they have, and here's the key point, and to what end do they wield their influence? That's the key.
That's
to
huge.
What end are they wielding their influence? Now back up. Everything that you discuss on your show, everything that I've been discussing for 40 years, 30 years in the public arena on talk shows and TV shows, I've argued that they have an agenda. It is not a conspiracy. You can find the empirical evidence of what they're doing and why they're doing it. Now that finally somebody with credibility other than Craig Hewlett has said, we have an oligarchy. We have nothing like a democracy going on. We have an oligarchy. We're a tiny group of elite, powerful economic elites, call the shots on everything that matter. I got an email from a friend, 30 years law enforcement, retired. When I sent this article and this study to him, he came back and said, you must be very pleased, Craig, because you've been saying this every day since I've known you for 30 years. And you used to be called a conspiracy theorist when I first met you. We were both very young when we first got together. He was with ATF, then with the Justice Department, counterterrorism with the State Department. And I said, no.
You were way ahead of your time, Craig. Way ahead of your time.
But it saddens me. Because how many people are even going to hear this? Because at the same time, these economic elites are crushing the mainstream media. We're about to go from six major corporations controlling the media. When Time Warner and Comcast merge, we'll have five.
Well, they got a plan, but they'll leave us alone, and we keep plugging along, my friend. Let me ask you this situation with this control. What do they want? What's their long-range goal worldwide, not just here? What do they want?
They want subjects. They do not and are uncomfortable with democracy. They have no interest in a free republic based on democratic principles. They do not believe in the sovereign nation state. They believe like a belief system. I believe their ideology can be called corporatism, but that's very hard to get your mind around if you've never been in the corporate world. They believe with balance sheets, econometrics, they believe they're smarter than the rest of us, the smartest guys in the room. They believe that as the elite, they should decide. The only thing I think probably bothers them a little bit, like the Bush family that I refer to as the Saudis of the West, is I think it probably bothers them a little bit that they don't get to wear white robes and crowns. But I do think that they believe we ought to see them that way.
They've got more money than they need. They've got the power that they want. Are they bored with life? You know, I keep going back and harping back to the movie Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's movie, and he died before he had a chance to finish it. Where these people are so bored that they have these bizarre parties and do whatever they have to do. Are they doing that to us right now?
Well, you know, they do have those bizarre parties. You know, just recently a reporter, a Financial Times reporter, infiltrated a Sheraton or a Hilton gathering of the elite banking fraternity where 20 neophytes were being brought into the fraternity of these elite international bankers dressed up as women, as transvestites, and they had to sing songs and accept humiliating behavior, and they did comedy skits making fun of Main Street, the poor and the homeless, and he videotaped it and audiotaped it until they caught him and threw him out. But he reported it with photographs. He took pictures. It was hideous. So you're not even off the mark a little bit about these bizarre parties. It is a very perverse world of power that makes them untouchable. They are untouchable.
You see, that's what I think contributes to this. I think many of them are mentally ill. They're deranged. And, you know, the power part of it is their aphrodisiac. It's their addiction.
You know, I was talking to a host that's been a friend of mine for 40 years. He was one of the first ones to ever interview me. But he's always been in the talk industry. And him and I didn't always see eye to eye. And I tried to explain to a caller that called in and criticized him, and he wanted me to attack the host as a guest for his past beliefs as a conservative Republican. And I refused to do it. And I refused, and I explained it to him. You have to understand, I'm not in the media. I'm not a journalist. I started out in the military. When I found out what was going on in the military, I got out and went into the corporate world. When I got into the corporate world, I moved up rapidly in 13 years to the war rooms and the boardrooms of Exxon, Weyerhaeuser, U.S. Home, the largest corporations in the world. and I saw the war room. I saw how these men think, how they operate. I did get to attend and join and be part of the Council on Foreign Relations meetings, these kinds of things. That was my political life. And then I moved into different areas, like you already know, federal law enforcement, working for Jack Metcalf. I have hands-on experience, and you're not that far off the mark that some of these men are mentally ill. Now, I don't mean mentally ill that you have to be hospitalized in a straitjacket because you can't function. They're at that level of mental illness whereby they're a neurotic, mentally based narcissism,
yep,
which allows them to operate. The same kind of mentality that allows criminality to exist on a coherent and logical fashion in criminality. They are acting criminally. What they've done in the banking industry, the torture of worldwide, the torture of innocent and young men in the prisons, in the military, the CIA, the blanket surveillance of every single human being on this planet, but particularly every single citizen in America, violating the Constitution. Do you realize every single of the 10 amendments have been violated except the third?
That's right.
They're gone. They're history. And this isn't opinion. This isn't a theory that it's going to happen. I used to argue that it was going to happen, because if A and B happens, you can count on C happening. That was the logical conclusion of me 20 years ago, why we would reach this stage. But I don't have to do that anymore. We're here now. It is happening, and we have, in fact, already lost the country. We now have to figure out how are we going to take it back from this oligarchy when, in fact, we're going to have the biggest charade, if you will, in our American electoral history, with the planned theater, the theatrics of Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush.
I believe that's exactly what's going to happen. I'd be surprised if someone like a Rand Paul gets nominated or something changes this. I think you're absolutely right. Nostradamus expert John Hogue has predicted that as well. It could be right on. Now, when you mention the Third Amendment, of course, which is the quartering of soldiers in private houses, that hasn't happened yet. But what is happening, for example, didn't the Supreme Court just make a ruling on unwarranted traffic stops?
Yes.
Where cops can stop, go in there, search your car, do whatever they have to do?
Yes. And martial law was, in fact, declared. I just had to explain to somebody on another talk show I did earlier today that during the Boston Marathon attacks, if you were paying attention to the video clips of the different SWAT teams that were going house to house, not only was martial law declared, but if you looked at them and you understood military and law enforcement from my perspective, you could see that this team going in this direction was wearing a particular color of camouflage. This team over here was dark blue. Another team was black. This one was a camouflage with a blue tint to it. These were all different federal government and military agencies were swarming the area. That's the essence of Homeland Security and the fusion centers.
My gosh.
That spells the death knell to local sheriffs, law enforcement, and anything like what you think America is.
So we see what happened in Nevada, where several people start showing up to say, hey, we're going to save this guy, Bundy, and the BLM backed down. They were told to back down. They had to back down. There's too much media exposure. We all jumped on it, and there's not much they could do. When you talk about taking this back from these elitists, from these sickos that are out there, how do we do that? You got to do it in mass. I mean, would they seriously try to kill us all off in order to make this plan work?
No, they pick us off one at a time, group by group, individual by individual, to end leaks at the Pentagon, at the NSA. I don't know if you followed how they stretched the imagination of every ounce of credibility. But a memo was sent out to every single person with a security clearance from Homeland Security to the Pentagon, CIA, that if they acted in the capacity of Snowden, they better pay real close attention, because they're being monitored. Their computers at work are being monitored for child pornography.
Jeez.
Now, this is a country where every day, almost every day, pedophilia takes place in Hollywood, in elite think tanks, in Washington, D.C., at parties. It is a known commodity in America that there is a brutal child trafficking that takes place, and it belongs to and is controlled by the elite. They're the only ones that can partake of it because they're the only ones that are protected from law enforcement, from prosecution. It's almost impossible to take one of these people down when they are caught and a lawsuit is filed, which several had just been filed in Hollywood of recent note. But the fact is, who in America is prepared to risk anything any longer? I've been at this almost 40 years, 30 years in the public arena in a pretty large way. I've gotten to be pretty well known, I think.
Yes, you have.
And I've kept the same phone number and website for over 20 years. And I can tell you, the change I've seen in the country is mirrored by the change I see in the oligarchy and how they're now treating this country. 15 years ago, they would never have thought, never would have even thought to put this country under the kind of surveillance we are all now experiencing. The Supreme Court never would have ruled in favor of Citizens United 1 and then 2 weeks ago, Citizens United 2, granting corporations untold amounts of cash that they can put into the electoral process. They never, ever would have allowed the violation of the First Amendment. My God, freedom of the press is history. Freedom of speech, they've cordoned off just in the Bundy incident, but this is the law we already know is already passed. They could declare any area anytime they want as a free speech zone, which is what they just did in the Bundy incident. They parked the media 3 miles away. You could protest 3 miles away.
Are we going to be at a point, Craig, where we're going to think we're free, we're going to think we're okay, because they're going to let the average person have their little job, have their home, let them go to their sporting events, and they'll just basically think that they've been left alone while they do their master plan. Is that how it's going to unfold?
Well, you couldn't put it any better than that. I think that is, you know, what did I just read? You know, from that the very study we started out talking about, they're asking the question now that we know this. Is it the top 1% or is it the top 0.01%? And are they merely affluent or is it more than that? And then the last question these two authors of the study asked, the very last thing is, to what ends are they wielding this influence? To what ends? See, that's my work. That's my job, is to understand the end. That's what I've been hired to do on and off, even with law enforcement. My job is to look at situations, or at Metcalf's case, look at a public law coming down the pike. What are the consequences? If A and B happen, what will C be? And how can I back this up with data? That's what I do for a living. I do think I know why they're doing this. And the next stage is about to happen. It's not a coincidence that Holder and Obama have come out to say, we think marijuana should be legal across the nation.
I'm glad they're doing it, but it's dramatic, isn't it?
Well, I'm a Nietzschean. That doesn't make me an anarchist, but as a Nietzschean, I don't care what you do in your personal life. I don't
exactly.
care if you're
exactly.
gay. I don't care if you use drugs. I mean, you can snort gunpowder and blow your brains out. It's none of my business. Just like what I do is none of your business. That's how a Nietzschean must hold true to his belief. But at the same time, do you think I don't know what the consequences will be if we legalize marijuana? And who's behind the legalization effort?
George Soros, the wealthiest
billionaires of Facebook, Google. These are the people that are funding the legalization aspect. But to what ends and why?
I see. Are they doing it because they want to dumb the whole population down? They think that if people are high all the time that, you know, they'll be less resistant to what they want to do? Or do they think they're going to make money on all this?
Well, both. First of all, the tax base is already known to be an accurate assessment in Colorado and Washington State. It's a moneymaker. The second thing is, this is the last thing the American people understand comes along with it, is yes, you'll have access to marijuana, but you'll be registered.
Stay with us. We're going to come back, Craig. We're going to take calls, continue talking about all of this right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Craig Hewlett with us. We'll get to your calls in a second. Craig, so next 5 years are going to be pretty fascinating years, aren't they?
Well, if we take the assumption, which I think has now been proven more valid than ever, that there is an oligarchy, we need to accept that they view us with a certain disdain. The people who have witnessed some of these fraternal groups partying, making fun of Main Street, the homeless.
It's all true. True to them.
It does hold true. I think they do. So I think we can anticipate their thinking in the next 5 years, particularly over the next 3 years with Obama, but a fundamental shift during the next election. After the next election, there's going to be a fundamental shift. It's going to begin over the next 3 years, but they're not going to do anything really drastic in the next 3 years. But I think they're going to set the stage for the finish, the final. As one of my clients, when he discovered Eric Holder and Obama, were suggesting that marijuana be made legal nationwide, he emailed me and said, could this possibly be the final solution? Now, he's a young man that has seen what drugs and alcohol has done to the young generation in this country. 21% of 18 to 30-year-old adult males live at home with their mothers. They don't work. They smoke dope all day. They stay drunk. They party. And they don't even try to get a job. 100 million American adults are permanently unemployed and considered unemployable. That's a third of the adult population in this country. Mm-hmm. So given that the oligarchy does, in fact, view us with considerable disdain, and I found it fascinating that Ralph Nader would actually suggest that some of those very people would join together and save us as a democracy. I've never heard anything so spurious and absurd coming out of Ralph Nader's mouth. It's shameful. But I can see where they're going to make sure that we have things that, in my opinion, don't matter. I deal with issues that matter. How many times has everybody heard me say this? But the things that don't matter, I think, will be given to the American people. Sex rights. The right to
everything. They want the diversion, the great diversion,
and even possibly a guaranteed annual income. Obamacare is borderline putting us in a stage. If they're going to give us this and force this upon us, why not give them a guarantee? Bush Senior actually suggested it once during a crisis during his administration. He looked around at everybody at the White House and he said, "Well, why don't we just write them all a check for $300?"
Well, you know, I thought during the 2008 financial crisis, I thought that a better plan would have been, rather than try to stimulate and save the banks and these corporations with billions of dollars, trillions, let's give every American taxpayer a check for $100,000 and tell them to buy goods and services in the U.S.
But that's because you care about the people.
Yeah.
The oligarchy took care of their own. When Hank Paulson pulls these 15 bankers together at the Fed and said, look, we're going to give you $1 trillion, okay? We're going to bail out the banks. Now, you guys are going to loan the money back, right? I thought, if you don't put it into the law that requires them to loan the money back to the domestic economy, why would they do it? They're bankers. Think about it. They're bankers, for heaven's sakes. Banking in itself is a Ponzi scheme and a criminal enterprise. In the Middle Ages, if you're a banker, there were signs up in villages. If a banker enters this village, we will draw and quarter you.
Well, here's an example, Craig. Take a check into your bank and make a deposit. It's quick. You'll be in and out in a few minutes, assuming there's no line. Now go right back in and try to take that out in cash after you put it in your account. It's like, you know, you're pulling teeth.
Go in and ask for a loan for $1,000 and you've got collateral, but say, I want the loan in cash.
They won't do it.
They will not do it because it's their money. And cash is a debt instrument. That's why it's called a note, not a dollar. It's called a note. And the banks own it. So, you know, let's get over the what-ifs. There's a lot of what-ifs, and I don't do what-ifs. I think I know and understand what they're going to do to this country with sex rights, drug usage, guaranteed annual income, breads and circuses, because this will tend to end any revolutionary tendency should the masses suddenly discover that they've been enslaved. If they were to discover what you and I are talking about tonight, the masses, on a large scale, they would revolt. And the only thing every government in the world for 6,000 years of history is afraid of is their subjects. They're not afraid of wars. They're not afraid of coup d'etats. They're not even afraid of economic collapse because it won't collapse on them. They're afraid of you and I.
Yes, they are. They sure are. If they're hearing this program right now, they got to be cringing. Cringing, don't you think?
Well, I'll give you an example. Henry Kissinger was on a Concorde flight to Europe, and Michael J. Fox got out of his seat in first class and went back and knelt down next to Henry Kissinger and said, "I just want to tell you how much I admire what you've done." And Henry Kissinger looked at him and said, "I don't know who you are."
I love it. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Sherry in Kerrville, Texas, to get things going. Hello, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Hewlett. I am a Coast Insider for over a year.
Well, thank you. Glad you're part of it.
It is. It's just wonderful to listen to all the past podcasts that you've had. Mr. Hewlett, you had mentioned something about the corporatism and how we need to figure out a way to take the country back. And I was wondering if, regarding the Bundy dispute, there is a BLM, that mitigation study, that surrounds this project, the solar energy project that they have. And I have been reading on it, and this mitigation study, it talks about all the environmental losses, about animals and plants, but the very interesting thing is they actually looked at the cultural and historical disruptions and interferences regarding the use and dependency of the land by humans, but what they were referring to were only Native Americans. Now, they had a result table, and each component had a no, and the study said no amending is needed on any one component, except I believe the whole study needs amending because they need to include an endangered species now on the brink of complete extinction.
The human race.
And the humans.
No, it's the Western American rancher. And I said, you know what?
That too.
Why don't they include the non-Native Americans in the study?
Well, first of all, the reason Native Americans are named is because Native Americans are, in fact, a separate nation state within America based on treaty. And Native Americans tend to get together, for instance, like they're doing with the Keystone Pipeline. Native Americans are collectively joining forces as tribal units and saying, not through our land. And they're the only ones that can actually do that. If you try to do it, for instance, the domestic population of Washington State tries to do it, we'll fail. But the tribes won't. Now, I'm not saying the tribes will successfully stop Keystone. What they'll get is they'll get a huge paycheck at the end of the day to give in. But they're the only thing that is part of the interfering with the federal government is because they are tribal and a nation state unto themselves. That isn't really even relevant, though. The truth is, look, we're going to lose this fight in the short term. I've already accepted that we're going to lose it.
And we already have, I think.
And yeah, if you want to be really honest, and I were to really let my Nietzschean side enter this discourse, if I were to accept with Seneca and Schopenhauer my stoicism, it's over. We've already lost it. Obama could do anything he wants. The federal government could do anything they want. They could come into my home right now, and the only thing I'll have to decide is, do I want to wear orange or black jumpsuits? They can make me disappear off this planet, and Kathy would never know where I am for the rest of my life.
Exactly. We called to put you on, and we couldn't find you anymore.
No, and you know, long ago I used to tell people that if you've got somebody that's political in your community and they disappear and you keep complaining that you can't find them, that's because in the prison system, this is already in place. If there's a person in the prison system that's problematic, they put them on a bus every day and they move them to a different prison. It's sort of like Yasser Arafat said, I never sleep in the same bed twice.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's what they do to you. Now, they've always done that in the prison system for select prison inmates that were problematic, like Eldridge Cleaver in the old days, for instance. But today, it's now enshrined under Supreme Court rulings and federal law. I can disappear without habeas corpus. No one will ever know forever. And in fact, if they wanted to, a drone could hit my house, and there's not a damn thing anybody in this country could do about it.
And they'd say it was an accident or something.
But all Obama has to do is say, I have no comment. He was on the list. Obama meets every Tuesday. It's called Deadly Tuesday, Terrible Tuesday. He meets every Tuesday and decides who to kill. He then commented once, and the press caught him commenting. He said, I never knew I would be so good at killing.
Unbelievable.
This is America. And we've lost it. Now, I'm not saying there's not something we can still do. We still have somewhat of a functioning democracy. But if you understand what this new study has outlined and what the Swiss study outlined on a global scale, you have to face that we're not going to fix this by voting Democrat or Republican.
No, we have a democracy, Craig, based on what they want us to have.
And what they want us to hear, see, watch. Like I said, it's being debated right now. In every area that matters, we now have only five banks in banking. We have two corporations that control airline production. In the defense industry, the auto industry, it's ever shrinking. In the media, it was six just a month ago. Well, if it goes through the Comcast and Time Warner merge, it'll be five major corporations. And then I read an article, which I was astounded, what was over, I think it was at Slate, they were complaining at the decline of the number of journalistic investigative reporters. And I'm like, what are you talking about, the decline of reporters? They're eliminating journalism systematically.
The investigative reporters are going by the wayside.
If it wasn't for Snowden, would Glenn Greenwald even be a name?
Of course not. Of course not.
So
I was in Los Angeles a month ago, as I am quite often. And I was talking to a Chinese couple. They were here from China. They were just vacationing. And they love America. They're having a great time. And I asked them, what's it like living in a communist country? Look at what we're doing and look at what they do in China. They said, and this is interesting, that most of the people in China don't even realize that they're in a communist state. They have their little jobs, and they do what they're doing, and they think they're beginning to become prosperous, and they seem to be happy. And they said, look, you know, we wanted to come to the United States. We applied for our visa. Here we are. And they don't realize that this small group of 75 people in China are running the whole show, and I think that's what they're going to try to do with us.
I believe they have successfully done that. I think it's already at that stage. When I used to give a lecture in, say, Los Angeles, I would do seven radio shows. We would announce on each show that I'll be at the Sheraton on a weekend. And sometimes 1,000 people would show up. Two nights in a row, 2,000 people would show up. But you know what we started noticing after about a decade? They're all the same people.
Same people show up.
And the same people show up at Bo Greitz's lecture, Bob Woodward's lecture, Philip Agee's lecture. They're all the same people. And pretty soon it got so crowded that people would leave Bob Woodward's lecture and come to mine. And people would stay at mine until the last hour and then go over to Bob Woodward's.
So the big thing will become, and we'll get back to calls here in a second, Craig, is how much pressure do we take before we say we can't handle it anymore? Enough is enough. Or do they know that, you know, they'll get what they want out of this, the control, the manipulation, and everything else. And then the rest they'll throw to us as crumbs. And as long as we have the little crumbs, like a little mouse would have in a house, he's happy.
If 21% of young men have already given up and they live at home with their mother and they don't have a job and they don't date, they don't want a wife, they don't want a family, they don't want a home, they don't even care if they have a decent car any longer. They're perfectly content to live at home with their mother and sit in front of video games and pornography. We're already on that treadmill. And once you're on it, once a sufficient number are on it, like the Chinese, there is no getting off of it. The Internet, you know, everybody believed the Internet was going to be democratic, that the Internet was going to set us free, that there would be this surge of libertarianism. You know, I knew that that was false from the very beginning, and an author at Yale wrote a book on the subject saying, no, what will happen is General Electric, pornography, Walmart, Amazon.com, that's what's going to dominate it. And the six major entertainment and industry media outfits, they'll decide what's the subject matter on the Internet. Because in the end, it has to come from the people themselves. It has to come from their heart and soul. They have to say, I want to be free. Each of us individually. Otherwise, there is no we. There is no us. In the United States, the U.S., there is no us. We're not. You and I are talking because it's George and Craig. Now, how many are listening that haven't turned this off, that don't want to hear bad news? You know, as a Nietzschean, Friedrich Nietzsche says, you need bad news. You need bad news.
You can't run from it.
You need to think of death every day so you'll understand what it is you hold in your life at this moment.
Well said. Let's go to North Hollywood, California. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Hi. I agree with your host 100%. It's over. I am in shock. I feel like that America is in a state of like a movie, like the invasion of the body snatchers. This legalizing marijuana, there's a gigantic problem. I know for a fact in the high schools in North Hollywood, Campbell Hall, Harvard Westlake, you name it, gigantic problems. So legalizing this and making it recreational use, okay, do you think we're going to have more people smoking marijuana or less? Of course you're going to have more. Will we have more car accidents or less? You're going to have more. I can't believe that people are in an outrage with this legalization of this stuff. It is so easy to get now, and it's very potent. There are kids who can get it from their aunts, from their uncles, from their grandmothers. It's amazing, and I just cannot believe how America is just going down the drain. And you're right. I'm 67. I am never going to see a Republican president again in this country. You've got more people with their hand out, and they're getting what they want. The schools, every teacher in the school is a liberal. If you see a Republican teacher, you're not getting hired.
It's believe it, Frank, it's not just that. You're going to get Republican presidents elected, too, in the future. There's no doubt. You might get that in the next 2016 election, but they're all the same. Back with more with Craig Hewlett in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got more calls than time, so let's go right to the phones. Carlos in Carson, California. Thanks for holding, Carlos. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, George and Greg. Greg, you know, the oligarchy was in control of the propagation of the drug trade way back in the late 1700s. When the Rothschilds and the British royalty and the Russells, who created the Skulls and Bones, were producing the British East India Company to send opium disguised as tea to India and China. And, of course, the same oligarchy is still in control today through George Soros, who's an agent for the Rothschilds, who George Soros is financing some of the agencies that are now promoting illegalization of marijuana, and they're using very prominent citizens like ex-President Fox of Mexico and ex-President Cedillo from Mexico to lead some of these agencies. And, of course, what that's going to do, once they legalize marijuana, they're going to go on to legalize cocaine, heroin, and you're going to have a much larger, greater percentage of people hooked up on dope. And you know, it's going to be, of course, the intent is to have a zombie generation of people who won't care when they're led into the gas chambers and the guillotines, which are already, already, from what I understand, already in use, or not in use, but they're waiting out there. So, you know, that tells where we're headed. These people, like you said, don't care about the subservient people like us. We're the slaves, and we're to be decimated. That's the ultimate objective.
Let's get your reaction to that, Craig. It's much like some of the things we've been talking about tonight.
Well, you know, he may be putting some carts before horses, but he is correct, Soros. The founders of Facebook, Google, or some of the wealthiest billionaires in the nation are behind the organizations that are promoting the legalization of marijuana and the referendums. And they're putting millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into it. Now Soros will tell you, in his book at least, he argued that we need to stop the criminalization because arresting young people for marijuana isn't the answer. We should take that money that we save from incarceration and put that into treatment centers. Okay, Soros is smarter than that. Nobody's going to take any money that isn't there through the incarceration process being eliminated. They're going to take any money and put it in any treatment centers anywhere, unless Soros builds the treatment centers and they're induced into going into the treatment centers, where Soros would then make money. But let's cut it to the chase, okay? We don't need to go back to the Brits. We have a heroin epidemic in the United States of America that's only surfaced in the last 5 years. The Taliban had completely wiped out heroin production by the year 2000.
The poppy seeds were gone.
They were gone. They were even given an award by the United Nations Narcotics Agency for having done that as one of the greatest accomplishments the UN had ever witnessed. Now it's the major producer. It's now record numbers. And guess who's guarding the poppy fields? I have over 100 photographs in a file that have been sent to me from Afghanistan. Some of the people are clients, brothers, cousins, etc. Photographs of them guarding the poppy fields. All of them have big grins on their faces.
Jeez.
And they're saying it's the greatest duty in Afghanistan. We're protecting the opium fields for the Taliban or the Karzai friendlies. But the one thing great about it, we're not going to get hit with IEDs.
Linda in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
George, great show. Always
Thank
great.
You, Linda. Thank you.
Every night. Can't go to bed until I hear
always,
you.
Always different, but we love them all.
Oh, God, I love shows. But anyhow, I want to know, I have a question now. Since we have all of the American people that are listening to this and are paying attention to all of this, if there is, like, our government decides to declare martial law or send the police or any other military or anything against us, if we end up in a war like they had out there in Nevada, are the military and the police and all of them, are they going to, knowing full well that they're going to be on the chopping block just as we are, but will they shoot at us or try to kill us off, you know, because they were ordered to do so, or will they band with the people that don't want any of this? Will they go with us or go against us?
Well, I'm afraid to have
question.
To report. I've already asked that question, you know.
That is a good question.
That I've worked on and off over the last 30 years with federal law enforcement. First the DEA, Secret Service for a short time, ATF, and the Justice Department Homeland Security. As a consultant, I have still a lot of friends that are active duty and some retired. I've asked all of them this question in private. All of them have told me the same thing. What will happen is those who do not want to put on, they laughingly say, those of us that don't want to put on the jackboots and kick America's butt will quit, will resign, will walk away.
Yeah, they will.
But
there won't be that many, though.
But there will not be that many. And all of them also reassured me that the new breed joining federal, state, and local law enforcement are not the same types of people that joined law enforcement 30 years ago, that joined because of the motto, protect and serve. They're not there for that reason. If they're ordered to kick in doors and step on grandmothers, they'll be more than happy to do it. As far as our military goes, our military is 60% illegal aliens enlisting into the military. And by the way, I'm not against immigration at all. In some cases, without some of these immigrants, we wouldn't have any productivity in certain areas of our economy.
That is very true.
Completely different subject. 60% of all new recruits come from countries other than America. They come here and join. If they didn't join the military to try to become citizens, they would be considered illegal aliens. And these guys, some of them have done 9 tours in war zones in behalf of the United States of America. Now, will they, if they're ordered to round up Americans, will they obey? Yes.
Let us go west. Raul in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Raul. Thank you.
Hey, how you doing, George? Good show, my friend, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the Ukraine situation. You know, it's funny, when I first found out about John Teeter, I kind of just put him off in the back of my head. Never really took it seriously. But over the years, things keep popping up, and it just keeps bringing me back to John Teeter. I wanted to talk about the whole Russian thing. And I got here something that was asked to John Teeter. They said, I think Russia is still very likely to attack the United States with nuclear weapons. It's hard to imagine being here to see it. And John Teeter basically says, you're also correct, but I want to add a twist to your thinking. Russia's enemy in the United States is not you, the average person. Russia's enemy is the United States government. I think we're at the brink of World War III. I don't really think that there's any way of going back. I think this has been building up with the whole Syria situation, with Libya, when they basically took out Gaddafi without taking into consideration what China and wanted to be done. There's also a part here where basically John Teeter says that everything starts off because of failing United States foreign policy and because of consistency, which is amazing to me, because that's basically what's happening with Obama. His foreign policy is failing. And he's basically not following through on what he says when he puts down a red line here and a red line there. So I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts about that.
All right. And Craig, let me tell you who John Teeter was. If you don't know, he was a supposed time traveler from the year 2036 who started posting on the Internet years ago. And he outlined some of the things that Raul was just talking about, civil unrest and stuff. And what's so bizarre about all of it is, one, it's uncanny. Whoever this John Teeter was, whether he was somebody from our time zone or the future, he knew what he was talking about. And I interviewed once an attorney in Florida, Larry Haber, who represented the Teeter family from now, this current time period, and they're real. It's bizarre, but those things that he just talked about, they're all coming true, aren't they?
Well, let me say something, okay? First of all, I don't need to be a time traveler to have come to the conclusions I've come to.
No.
If you're willing to give up your personal and future economic life in what you had originally chosen to do, and devote your entire life to doing this work that I do. I get paid to do this. Okay, I actually earn a living doing this. If I'm not right, I have no clients. I don't have the luxury of being wrong. But it is boring, depressing, cynical. It almost creates angst. I mean, if I don't sleep at night, there's good reason. Okay, I don't think anybody's listening. But, you know, are we going to go to, is Third World War guaranteed? Is it U.S. foreign policy? See, the language there, I have a problem with. There is no U.S. foreign policy. Noam Chomsky's wrong that there's an American empire that's in decline. There is no American foreign policy. There is no America or American sovereignty left. There hasn't been for decades. We're not waiting for the New World Order or a one world government. It's here. It just doesn't look like what you think it would look like. So regardless of what anybody predicted in the past, the language is going to be inescapably in error. The global regime of economic interdependence is here. It's money, it's power, it's a production of the things that matter to the global elite. They have no sovereign nation state they care about. There is no foreign policy being emanated from the White House or Obama. Obama is not even the president of the United States any more than Jeb Bush will be when he's elected. This is all great theater. It's wonderful theater. And if you want to remain a Republican and a Democrat, you could have a really good time doing it. There's still champagne and electoral victories. You can have sex and drugs and party your brains out. But I'm telling you, you're not even living in the reality that I'm living in.
You know, part of this, Craig, I think that, you know, maybe the best way is to protect your family, keep your health, have some fun, enjoy your life. We're not on this planet for a very long time, and just move on. Sometimes I think
every
that's...
day, along with what Montaigne said, I think about death, my death. I tell my clients, pay attention, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. One day that's going to be utterly true.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. You know, I just had 6 or 7 coast-to-coast guests over the last 8 months. They died, and they were great, solid guests. They died, and, you know, one day I'm going to be saying that about you, or you're going to be saying that about me. It's
yes.
Inescapable.
And there's a reason for it. Why Schopenhauer, Montaigne, Seneca, Nietzsche, why I wrote 2 books on Nietzsche and poetry and music to Nietzsche's my poetry based on Nietzsche's work. There's a reason for this. It's not that I'm a gloomy person. That's what Oliver Stone said about my work. It's a very gloomy presence, Craig. That's a term they use to describe Nietzsche. You're so wrong. I spend my days with hummingbirds, 7 chows, 6 cats, and I live in paradise. My bills are paid. I'm out of debt. I own my own property. I own the vehicles I drive. I don't know what the rest of you have been doing. But I have looked at this country and realized early on, 30 years ago, I'm on my own out here. I've chosen to do this in the public arena because I have the skill sets to still earn a good living doing it, and I would rather do this than any other thing to earn a living, to try to help my country and you, the listener, understand what is taking place around you. Because in a very short amount of time, 3 to 5 years, you're not going to recognize this country. And the people in power are going to stop pretending it's democratic.
What will they do when I continue these kinds of broadcasts, Craig, 5 years from now, because I plan to? What will they try to do?
Well, you know, that's a rough one because, you know, if you and I were to start having significant impact, the way, say, Ross Perot had impact in pretending he was going to create a third party, that's mm-hmm. a myth, by the way, to Ralph Nader's belief system. Ross Perot never intended to really run for president or create a third party legitimately. He never intended that. He just wanted to hurt Bush because of an old Texas fight. That's why he bailed out.
You're right.
Nader's
and he,
looking
and
in the
he
wrong
did.
Direction.
He did. He did it brilliantly, didn't he?
And it was ugly what he did. He just wanted to hurt Bush Sr. because yep. Bush Sr. threw his butt out of the Reagan White House.
And he didn't care what it cost to do it.
And it, you don't anger a Texas billionaire is the lesson. But the bottom line is nobody's going to come and save us. And one day, all of you listening, whether you believe me or not, I don't care how you come to the truth. Nietzsche said some people can only find the truth through cynicism. If that's it, so be it. But you've got to shed your bigotry and your narrow-mindedness and stop believing the Republicans are going to save you or the Democrats are going to save you or now Nader, billionaires are going to save us, for heaven's sakes. The truth is, nobody's coming to your rescue. America as America is over. It's finished. All I'm waiting for now is them to let the mask drop.
God, Craig, I'm ready to jump off a bridge.
Well, when they drop the mask, and you'll see what's in the White House one day, when they drop the mask and they stop pretending it's democracy, they stop pretending we have liberty and freedom and the Constitution, when that mask slips, you're going to see it. And when you see it, believe me, you folks have never seen evil.
Did you ever think you'd be thinking this here?
No. No, I told Kathy when I started doing this 40 years ago, I told her, I'm going to do this. I will never stop until I die, because what's more important than truth?
Let's go to Charles in Baltimore, squeeze a call or two in. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, I appreciate you letting me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's even worse than what you say it is. And I'll tell you why. This is a different direction, but it is true. Okay, for example, there was a demonstration about a blind person who was denied his rights today. How many people saw it? Well, the media wouldn't cover it. For one thing, in my view, during the 60s, the civil rights movement controlled the media, because whatever there were demonstrations and whatever there were issues, you know, the media was there. But for us, like the blind, for example, because we are so small, and we really are, you know, the media just doesn't have the interest. For example, you know, who cares that a blind person in college can't, you know, the colleges won't allow him to use or won't pay for his equipment, the special equipment that he needs. Who cares, for example, a person like myself made less than the minimum wage working at a workshop that these companies got it done for free, next to nothing, because a law was a lie that said blind people are not capable of being productive, when we really are. I could tell you a whole story how productive I was. How I was able to make the minimum wage. It was one of the, you know, you shouldn't have to work that hard on piecework like that.
All right, we are almost out of time, Craig. Go ahead.
A nation is judged by how it treats the least of its citizens, the weakest, the poorest. That's always been true. And I'll repeat, you haven't seen the side of our nation state's governing people, the oligarchy that we're now having to admit exists. You haven't seen the side to them that I have. And until that happens, we're not going to wake up.
Craig Hewlett, our guest, website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com.